So I've always wanted to be a professor, never made it. So this gives me a little bit of a simulation of what a professor feels in front of a class. I've decided during the break to forego a message or talking about polarization for two reasons. First reason, I determined to make this a messageless weekend for a change. And number two, it is a subject that just a cursory view would not do it justice, and I'd rather not do that. I think it would make sense if we make that into another special time just to devote to that subject. It'll be more meaningful, we'll be more focused, we'll get into it, rather than just, you know, touch upon it a little bit. So if you don't mind, we won't do that. Then we will use this session to do what I like to do, and that is still more question and answers. We should have really asked you to write something down on a piece of paper or so you won't be exposed and or something like that. Perhaps we can still do that if you don't feel like exposing yourself, the person asking the question. Maybe you write something down, pass it to the front. While you're doing that, I like to take a few moments to talk to a special group of people here, and that's the FTTA graduates. About one-third of you, I would say, roughly, can I get a show of hands who were in the training? That is not a third. That is, thank you. That's close to more like, some are not here, probably they have left, I don't know. But it seems like there are sitting here more like 40% or so. So if this weekend we have 220 people, then 40% of that would be, how many, 80 people? Is that about right, you think, that many who have been through the training? Okay. So in any event, a significant number, percentage. And I'd like to, the others, if you don't mind, just a few moments. Yesterday, after the morning meeting, during lunch, we had some fellowship, and this subject was broached, and that is the many challenges that FTTA graduates faced and are still facing. I cannot say that I am, as one who is a teacher in FTTA, I am not going to say that I am totally aware of all those challenges. But having traveled and having been in touch with your peers or your compatriots, I do have a sense of graduates have to face when they leave the training. The training is a very unique place, as you know. It's not the church life. The training is not the church life. The training is a very intense school kind of environment, and with a lot of restriction and rules that you have to live by, not at all simulating real life. And many who went into the training, we're getting an increasing number of this type, never had a church life. They were just saved from the campus. They, you know, they were so new that they hardly have any church life experience. So they went into the training, another environment that is not the church life. Okay. So they came out of the training having no idea what church life is. And so they only know the training life, and when they get into the regular church life, there was quite a discrepancy. There's not the structure, the rules, and the regulation. Yeah, on the other hand, there's not the kind of support system available to them, shepherding, caring, guidance, and direction, or even some kind of counseling. So they just don't know what's what, what's north, what's south, what church life, where do I fit? Now, even with some, those who have a church life before, their kind of a church life is also quite more like a college age, you know, in the church life, which is a little bit different than a non-college age in a church life, a working person. So that's also new to them, you know. They might have even been a grown up in the church as a high schooler, junior high, and college, maybe in another campus, another city. Now they're in through the training, they come out, they return to their locality or whatever. They also have to struggle to fit in, to find their role, their place in this new church life environment. Then thirdly, I think in the training, there's so many classes and so many courses, but there's really not any very specific help rendered to graduates about post-training life or church life. I mean, in my class, I said a few things, you know, a little bit here and there, but that's not enough. That's quite general. So there's also something a bit lacking in that way. Now, another factor is you come into the church, ended up in a church life somewhere. Not all the brothers or the church in that place are really that aware of your needs. They just welcome you, praise the Lord. Another graduate that's going to save the church, you know, here, or something like that, or at least pump up the church and function and all that. So the expectation is there, whilst the corresponding and necessary shepherding is not so deliberately considered and exercised. So you have a situation where there is some either spoken or unspoken pressure to perform, to, and I say this in a positive sense, to be, to help, to contribute. While there's not that kind of shepherding and care necessary, both human and spiritual side, to bring you to a stable situation that you can function in that kind of a way. So that's another situation. Then another factor is that you are thrust into, you're now 24, 25, 26, something like this. You're suddenly thrust, you have just gotten into a totally new stage in your life. And this new stage happened to be one of the most critical stage of your life. That means 2 years, 4 years out of school, 2 years in a training. Now you're at a marrying age, you know what I mean. You are at an age to determine your career direction and all that kind of thing. And those are all tremendously important decisions in your life. And yet at this point in time, you are somewhat in limbo, somewhat in a loss, kind of a bit of a loss of a kind of condition. And with all these things piling on you, and without the necessary and proper care in the decision making and even in going through this kind of process, I can see how a lot of you can be quite easily drawn or distracted or you know, having to do your own thing or something like this. And so it's overwhelming, and it sort of takes you away from the church life. Oh, it can take you away from the church life. So we have seen dear graduates, brothers and sisters, for this or that reasons that I mentioned above just now, having difficulty to cope, to survive, if you will. Some could not go on in the church life. They just left. And some only engage in a peripheral way. We have seen this. Now, having said that, I can testify to you also in many places, there are many graduates that have made that transition very successfully and become very useful right away. So I'm not saying it's all bad here at all. There's a lot of success stories. But there are the difficult ones. And certainly there's a lot of burden and a lot of feeling for that. And it is a hole we have to plug. It is something that we have to address, and we're beginning to talk about it. I really would love to find some time just with this group of brothers and sisters. To listen to them. I like to hear from them to find out more details. And at least in some way, in a small way, we can offer some help, perhaps. Both my daughters went through the training, so as a father, I sort of know firsthand what they went through. Out of the training, you need at least 1 year of decompression. I call it decompression. You know, you go to the moon, you come back, you have to stay in a module for a little bit before you come out to sea level, you know, air pressure. Actually, decompression is not a good word. Transition time. It is very real, very real. If I go to the training today, I need that. Having looked and observed, I realize even I would need that if I've been in the training like that. So it is not a joke. It is something quite serious. And if within that year or for some it's even more than a year, they are able to transition with the proper support system in place and guidance, I tell you, I saw some very, very good situations, absolutely wonderful results. And I also must say that for those who have not been to the training, so please don't take this in the wrong way, because you are as loved as those who have been there, and those who have been through the training are not some elite group of people. But nevertheless, they have been through the training, and they have picked up a lot of good things on truth, on, you know, matters of the recovery, on vision. They have been quite helped in a lot of things. Now, you may ask the question, well, if that's the case, how come they have these problems? Well, you know, look. I mean, your children, they will go through the junior high, high school, college. Wonderful. Does that mean they have no problem? I tell you, they have a lot of problems. And maybe we shouldn't even use the word problem to describe that. It's just the challenges they have to manage, they have to handle in order to go on in life. You see, that's all. It's very normal. Even though they've been gotten so much spiritual help, now they are out into real world. There's still a lot of things they have to face, despite what they have picked up and learned. The good thing is that all that they have picked up and learned are just these riches are in them. And in the long run, they will come into play. They will blossom. They will become useful, whatever is in them. Once they attain to a level of stability in a normal way of going on wherever they are. So, in other words, there's still a lot of potential with each and every one of them. So, for that reason, I bring this matter up, and I feel we need to do more to help. I will not get into today about, you know, giving them advice or something. I want you to know that we understand. I want you to know that we know it's difficult. I want you to know that we care. And whatever we can do to help, we will do. Let me just leave it at that, okay? I hope we can find a time, not just here in the Bay Area, elsewhere, just to gather these ones together, and they can even help each other, your testimonies, your learning. This weekend, one thing that is not a lack is we don't have enough time for testimonies. I actually like to hear testimonies, and I think you can all get help from each other in that way. But anyway, we're just a bit crunched here. All right, now I like to use the rest of the time, 40 minutes or so, for really some good round of questions and answers. You okay with that? You're right, huh? Okay. Well, this first one says, concerning setting up a proper schedule of our daily life, what will be a guideline for having balanced and proper schedule for church life, job, and family life? Good question. We are not angels. We are human beings. And actually, you have to realize, and I have not talked about the pillars, but if we get into the pillars, especially if we get into Exodus 25, which talk about 9 pillars, okay? 4 in the back that holds up the veil between the holy place and the holiest of all, and 5 that holds up a screen between the outer court and the holy place. If you study that, you'll find out very quickly that all these pillars are made in the same way. And that is, they are all made of wood, a special kind of wood called acacia wood, which, if you go and study, is one of the heaviest wood there is around. Today, people still use acacia wood for floors, for furniture, for all kinds of things, because of their heaviness and hardness and durability. That's the kind of wood they grow in the desert, in Sinai, and they use that to build these pillars, tall pillars set in gold, silver sockets to hold up these screens and veils. But they're not just wood, they're overlaid with gold. And we all know that the wood refers to the humanity and the human living of Jesus. The gold refers to the divinity and the divine nature of God. And so it is gold overlaying wood. The important thing here is that this supporting element is wood, whereas the expressing element is gold. All right? So that means in the church life, which the tabernacle in one sense depicts, the And then not only that, you also have the boards, right? The boards around same makeup. These boards around same makeup. Wood overlaid with gold. So this tells us a very, very clear point, and that is all the supporting elements, that is all the members of the body, you and I, we must have a strong humanity. Of course, the strongest and the best humanity in this universe is the humanity of the Lord Jesus. But we need a strong humanity to support the church, to support the things, to support the testimony of the Lord. But this humanity must be overlaid and mingled, really, with God and the divine, His divine nature. It's that mingling that produces pillars. Now, I stress today here, in response to this question, the wood again. And that is for us to really enjoy this mingling to the point that we can function as pillars, as the supporting structure for the church life wherever you are, or to become pillarized, really. You need a very healthy, normal human life, human living, as a base. So this point about being balanced in your schedule to take care of your job and family is actually very necessary. We're not here to say forget your job, throw your kids away and come to the meetings, and go knock on doors. No, it won't work. It will work for a little bit, but not too long. It will fall apart. A strong church has a strong base of saints who live a normal human life. Yet not human life alone, but that human life mingle with the divine. So this human life is very, very important. So now the question here is how to balance that. Well, we can only give principles. We cannot tell you how to balance it. It's up to you to balance it. Well, when you talk about schedule, the main thing we're talking about here is time. It is time. But it is not just time, but the energy that is expended in those times, we talk about time management and all of this. I think there is some need for that. Some of us having problem, not because we ran out of time. It's your time is not properly managed. So you have these experts, these consultants that will help you to manage time. And we should not be so proud to say, I don't need that kind of help. Actually, we can benefit from that kind of help. In Southern California, we have this get-together of these full-timers. I always ask the last session a brother who has been in business to talk about time management. These are full-timers serving ones. Full-time serving ones especially need time management. Otherwise, their days will just be squandered away easily, because there's no schedule, there's no management. Well, we're all busy, right? This and that. And on top of all the necessary things, family, job, and all of this, we also have the church over here. So how do you manage all these things? Evening meetings, weekend meetings, when do you spend time with your kids and your spouse, and how do you, when do you take care of your job needs and all of this? I'd frankly tell you I don't have a standard answer, and I don't think there's one, and neither am I a time management expert. But I just like to say that there is a way. I would like to say that, again, back to this one thing, you have to prioritize. You have to prioritize what's important, what's secondary, what's tertiary. You have to prioritize things. Otherwise, you're just running like a chicken with a head cut off, multitasking and doing something really not important, wasting a lot of time there. Whilst what is important, you have no time left. You have to sit down and prioritize things. Then you say, what is important? Well, I will always say the Lord is the most important. You agree? I'm not being over spiritual. The Lord is the most important. I mean, if God is not number one in your life, then let's forget about it, you know? What else is important? Excuse me. I would say your marriage is important. Your wife, your husband, very important. Very important, I'll tell you. I like to spend one weekend with you just on marriage. Just on marriage. Even for those of you who are not married yet. Why some marriages are working and some are not working. It's not magic. It's not, you know, that kind of thing. It's how you work on it. It's how you live your marriage life. And I have a lot of feeling when I say this, because even in the Lord's recovery, we cannot boast that all our marriages are that great. In fact, we have our share of problems in marriages. And I'm not talking about middle age crisis, that I'm talking about new marriages, even new marriages. And I'm involving a lot of that, you know, marriage counseling. Not by choice, and you know, from courting to whatever, and I find that the guidance to young couples is so incredibly important, even post-marriage, not just marriage, okay, off you go. No, I tell you, life now begins. Challenges begin. So many things. And so, by the way, more reading. You like more reading? More reading for you. There are three to four chapters, contiguous chapters, in the series called New Believers by Watchman Nee. Not Witness Lee, Watchman Nee. 52 lessons, there are four contiguous, starting with how to find a mate, all the way to husband and wife, and then how to raise children, relationship of husband and wife. Now, you may say, Watchman Nee, who is this guy from China? We're in United States. You'd be surprised how progressive Brother Watchman Nee was. Today, if you go back, the principles, I mean, enormously helpful. Very helpful, very applicable. And I tell myself, I wish I had that kind of fellowship when I was starting out. You know, unfortunately, those were some of the chapters I didn't read. So go read it. It's good even for unmarried ones or not yet married ones. Okay. You got to take care of your marriage. But you don't take care of that marriage before the Lord. Now, when I say the Lord, I always have another thing, that's the church. To me, the church and the Lord is one. I don't separate them. So the church is number one. I mean, the Lord is number one. The church really is number 1B, you know, the part of that, okay? Then the next thing, those of you who are married, you need to take care of your marriage. You need to nurture it. You need to water it. You need to farm it to make it grow. All right? You need to work on it. And there's a lot of points to that. Okay. Then, obviously, for those who have starting families, who have children, you need to take care of your families. There are some spiritual brothers who use the meetings as an excuse to stay away from the family. That's bad, really bad. You shouldn't do that. You should take care of your family, your kids. These are your kids. And mothers, you should raise up your children in the Lord, the fathers and so on. But, I say again, not before the Lord. Now, how do you manage that? That's where prioritizing, where time management comes in. But I'm just listing for you. Your job is important. It's your job. You have responsibility. You have to do a good job. But you better line up your job in the right place and not make your job number one. Seek first what? The kingdom. The kingdom is Christ with the church. You still have to take care of that first. But you take care of that in a balanced way. So your job you have to take care of. Now there's a lot to talk about how to take care of your job. You know, today they will make you work for 80 hours, or you can work 80 hours if you wish. They love you. But should we work 80 hours? Do we need to work 80 hours? And I would sometimes even ask, do we really need that job if it takes me away from the Lord and the church? I'm serious. On the one hand, I say we need to take care of our work. On the other hand, I say beware. Be careful. Be careful. Do you need to do that? Do you need to go on fast track and become the next youngest partner in that law firm? You know what that means? That means 5 years of 60, 80-hour weeks. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm just using that as an example. It's an extreme example. Brothers, that's why I talk to you, brothers and sisters. You have to be clear about your identity and destiny. Then you make this decision. Otherwise, you're just like everybody else on that rat race, you know. And some, unfortunately, are overreaching. They don't have the capacity, but they saw everyone do it, so they join the race. And then they end up disappointed. So I would say in this matter, you have to be very, very sober. Very sober about it. Consider this. Look at the hours you have in the week. Put some kind of a schedule together and stick to it. And every so often, you have to revise it because life is always changing, always evolving. These are just common things we all have to do. So in terms of the Lord, all I say is don't compare with one another. You just have to do something unto the Lord and not owe the Lord anything at the end of the day. All right? The Lord may require me more. The Lord may require you a little bit less. Don't compare. But we all must live with a clear conscience, a good conscience before God, that at the end of the day, my conscience will be restful and peaceful before God. And before the saints, before the church. I have to do that. So I have to figure out how these things are. With spouses, you need a date. I suggest you need a date. Every week you need a date. I'm serious. To say I love you, you know. To refresh the romance, to be with each other for quality time, it goes a long way. It goes a long way. Yeah, you have to figure that out. Kids, you need to take them here and there, do this and that. And I would like to say, do really your kid needs to play the cello and the piano and ballet? And throw in Chinese, of course. Do they really need that? And let me extend a little bit more. Do you really need to prepare them for Harvard? I mean, really? Really? I tell you, these are very, very rubber meet the road issues here. I would say, really, I mean, again, an old person here, it's not necessary. It's not necessary. You know, as long as they can get a good education, they can develop their capacity, they are... the important thing is, you know what? Let me tell you one story of one saint. Went to Harvard, you know, smart, went to Harvard. 4 years later, come out of Harvard, decided he would be an atheist. This is a brother, young man in the church life. Okay? Now, so what? You went to Harvard, and you come out an atheist. Is it worth it? Saints, we have a totally different value system than the world. You might as well settle that early on. You don't go around and compare with, you know, the Smith and the Jones next door. We are in another realm, brothers and sisters. We really are. That does not mean we become abnormal and crazy and... No, we're very human. But we are not like the world. We are not like the world. We are a different species. We're a different kind. Even if we raise up our children to send them to good schools, it's for a different purpose. If you don't have this in you, you will never inculcate that in your children. And they will get the wrong message. You just want me to go to Harvard, right? You just want me to be this and that, which you didn't be, you didn't become. You are just trying to make me something vicariously. I know all this stuff, by the way, okay? I'm not a dummy, all right? I'm not some dumb preacher here, okay? Do we? I mean... I tell you, some of you say, I'm not even married. Why are you talking to me about this? I tell you, you should start thinking about this even before you're married. You have to get this down. You have to get this straight. I have seen lives, precious lives, damaged, if not ruined, because of the lack of a proper care in the raising up. Many times I don't blame the children, I blame the parents. Okay? Now, so again, I cannot tell you what to do. If you, you have to just figure it out. But for the Lord's sake, the Bible, when it talks about time, it mainly talks about it in two places. One, in Psalms 90. 90? Yeah. Teach us to number our days that we may have wisdom. All right? The point is number it. That means measure it. That means manage it. That means, you know? The other one in the New Testament is don't be foolish, but be wise. What? Redeeming the time. Because of the evil days. So there's talk about redemption of time. Redemption of time does not mean you get back the time you lost. Unredeemable. What it means is seize the opportunity. Don't let the present opportunity go. All right. So all I can tell you is you must vary spiritually, but also very pragmatically. with sobriety, work out how these hours should be. But you must do it without owing anything to the Lord. I passed through all of this, never missing any meetings. That doesn't mean I serve in everything, no. We also did that with an amount of sacrifice, especially my wife, Vicky. She sacrificed a whole lot so that I can serve, so that, you know, she can be in the church life. When I say sacrifices, we probably were not able to do everything we want. You know what I mean, this, that, like today, you know, so many things. But today, looking back, we made, as young couple, we made our measure, young parents, we made our measure of mistakes. But on the whole, we are very thankful to the Lord for keeping us in that way. I would only say that, I would say this. My one question is 20 minutes. I don't know in order which one. I have to be fair. You don't know, huh? Pretty much, okay. How can I discern who to trust to go in the church life for personal fellowship? Well, also a good question. I would like to say this, that there are two main categories, or three main categories of people. Number one, it may be a surprise to you, are your peers. But not anybody. It must be some that you have some relationship with, some real mutual trust in, some mutual care in. Some of you who have been to the full-time training, you have built up some relationship with some trainees. And it is quite normal that those relationships become lifelong, even you're in separate localities. I mean that in a, you know, in a good sense, spiritually, not in a honey sense, right? And that's quite normal. To be able to confide in some of your peers because they're at the same stage where you are, they can understand certain things, they have similar experiences, I think that is one place. But for deeper help, certainly you must take advantage of some of the older or senior or more mature or more experienced saints. Now, that doesn't mean anyone who's old is the right person at all. You have to have, the word here is discern. You have to have some discernment. And I don't think it'd be that difficult that in your locality or nearby, there would be such saints. They could include some leading ones. They could include certain just older ones, sisters, for example, who are positive for the Lord and His recovery, who have certain experiences and have a heart to help. So this I surely would advise. I like to say a word here right now to brothers. Brothers are usually prouder than sisters, and which means they are more likely to say, "I don't need help. I'm okay. I can handle it. I'm a brother, so I know." It's harder for them to humble and say, "I need help." And I have seen brothers like that deprived of the help they need because of their pride. Actually, I'll tell you, for a young man to be able to learn humility and obedience is a salvation. It's a preservation. You may be in your 20s, even late 20s, maybe even in your 30s. But you would not be so proud to say, I don't need help, I live my life, I'm my own man. You would be open to the advice and counsel of some senior brothers. I tell you, it can only help you. It will not hurt you. All right? But you need to be humble. You need to be open. And I advise the brothers, young brothers, to do that. Then the third category would be, you know, you may know some co-workers, you know what I mean, those who are really in the Lord's work. I wouldn't advise you go bother them for everything, sometimes as occasion would require, sometimes these brothers are interested in your situation. Well, take advantage of that for some fellowship. So that's all I can say about. There are certainly ones that they are not of help to you. They could not help you, and they shouldn't help you. You don't need to go there, right? I think this is good. How do you explain to new young adults about dating in the church life? I knew that's going to come. Dating as a practice, as a cultural practice in this country, of course, is a very common one. It's a very prevailing one. But I have to believe dating in 1930 is different from dating in 2010. The meaning has changed. All right? You see my point? So I would only talk about this in the context of today's concept of dating, which is not good. I know, I've read churches, Christian churches, that have come to the same conclusion. Young pastors, whatever you call them, these young counselors, have faced too much of this kind of thing in their church or situation to come to conclusion, and some of them even wrote books to warn about this way of dating today, which eventually led to a lot of very messy situation, including fornication, including you name it. All right, they realize this, and they even have, I've seen books written to help the young people, Christians, in a different way, and not being so free in this matter of dating. Well, when you talk about dating, you must talk about marriage, the sanctity of marriage, the honor of marriage, the importance of marriage. You have to start there. If you do not have a view of marriage in that way, you will not take care of your courtship or your coming together with another person with the same kind of weight. So you go around what they call kicking tires. You go around trying. You go trying, you know, what all this kind of thing. And today, all the stuff that comes out of Hollywood, especially those TV shows, does not help. You can date three people all together at the same time, and we're just friends. We do this, that. You know what all that leads to, okay? Not something bad. We have to start with a proper high view of marriage. In God's ordination. Then based on that, we will take this matter of finding a spouse very, very seriously and carefully. This does not mean we're old-fashioned. This does not mean we are restrictive. This does not mean at all we control people's lives. Not at all. Not at all. But it does mean that with guidance, you would follow a certain way properly and healthily. That would result in a good situation, a good marriage for the Lord and for yourself. And so I certainly don't promote dating in today's kind of way. You know, go check it out and try it out like that. But rather, through the feelings that you have for another brother or sister, and I say again, not trying to be old-fashioned here, but back to the last question, to have a proper, fellowship in the Lord with someone more mature, older ones, it's a covering, it's a help. Like I say, Vicky and I are involved with countless of such cases, and we don't do it with, you know, whoa, you know, who's getting married, who, you know, just for the sake of being nosy and, you know, tantalizing things. We really have a burden because of so much we have seen that they would have a good start. You know, with everything, the start is very important, even before marriage. I'm not even talking about wedding day. Wedding day is too late. Before that time, that so-called courting time, how to get to know each other, that is, by the way, one of the most important thing before marriage is to get to know each other. You will never know the half of it, but you try to know as much as possible. And let yourself be known, all right? Because you must go into a marriage with your eyes open. After you get married, close it. Now that is a real something that's worth about $1 million, okay, right there. Okay, to know one another's heart, to know one another's, who each one is, you will never find two that is totally compatible, is exactly the same. There's no such thing. But there is the side of each other's families, very important, each other's, where the heart is at, each other's habits and likes and dislikes. And all of this is not so that you can change it, right? It is so that you know. You know what you're getting into. You have to read these chapters to find out how much marriage is about not just loving, it's about accommodating. Good marriages is about accommodating. Okay, well, back to this point. So so you may meet a brother or a sister and have some time together. It does not mean that will work out, but neither are you kicking tires, all right? Because you never know that person. You have to find out by some coming together. To know. And then it goes from stage to stage to have more and more knowing, deeper and deeper knowing, even at the point of engagement. Now you don't say, okay, done. No. That is the time between then and wedding, a further knowing. A further knowing. And after you get married, I said with your eyes closed, you really can't close your eyes. It's a lifetime of knowing the other person. A lifetime of knowing, just like we're still knowing God, aren't we? It's a lifetime of deeper knowing. So, because knowing brings understanding. Understanding brings appreciation, all right? And appreciation is what will give you the true care and love at the end of the day. All this romantic stuff, which is Hollywood, I say, you go to look at the Hollywood films, either it's just, no one ever gets married there. It's just a wild, fornicatious life. Or they always stop at getting married and they don't have the rest of the story. both we don't care for. One is bad, the other is unreal. So life begins at marriage time. And so that's too much to say. But I think this is good enough for this. Again, I say, brothers and sisters, don't use the world as the measure. We are not the world. Don't even try to copy or compare. We're a different kind and species. All right? Nothing to do with old-fashioned or new-fashioned. Okay. All right. Yesterday, you talked about your friend, I'm a front row brother, spoke of having a sense of duty to function in the church meetings. Can you speak more about your expectation of the role of brothers? What is a reasonable or an unreasonable expectation? Okay. I spoke that very much meaning it, that I am a front row brother. I am. And as much as possible in the church meetings, I will fight for the front row. That's just, I grew up that way. And I don't always get to the front row because some other front row brothers beat me to it. But so even if, when I sit in second row, I'm still a front row brother. Do you get my point? Even when I'm in third row, my heart is still the front row brother. That's really my main point. Not physically you are in the front row every meeting, but inside you're a front row person. You get that? I think that's good enough. All right. There are times I'm sitting in the back, way back there, for a certain reason, but my heart is right in the middle. And I told some of the trainees, I call this the diamond lane. You know, do you have diamond lanes up here? You know, where you go in to the left, you merge left, and you couldn't even get out. Life in the diamond lane is fantastic. So that even when you want to get out, you couldn't. Isn't that wonderful? Don't stay on the right lane. You get on, and you didn't look carefully, exit only. You thought you're on the freeway, and suddenly you're down the hill on an off-ramp. You know the problem? You're on the right lane. It's easy to get off, even not by choice. You're just off. Get in the diamond lane. That's called the front row brother. All right. Now, as far as functioning in the meetings, same thing. I'm not just a front row brother, just sitting in the front row. I mean front row in the way of functioning. In the way of functioning. Now, I don't want to place that expectation on you. No, you got to function. I place that function on myself from day one. That in a meeting, unless there's some reason, I must function. That's the sense of duty I have. So I do not want to speak this weekend and say, you must do this, you must do that. I only offer myself as a testimony to share with you such a life of exercising the Spirit as possible. And most importantly, it is a habit. I sit in the front row by habit. I function in the meetings by habit. And habits are, as opposed to disposition, is acquired. Acquired. So I can only encourage you, brothers, to acquire such a habit from when you're young. So that when you're old, it just is normal. It's just normal to function, to be like that. And I would like to say, I better end here. Brothers, especially the brothers, I do not place as much burden on the sisters on this matter as I do brothers. Because in the meetings, I tell you, brothers, you have to you have to shoulder, like those priests, ark. Stand in the water until all of Israel pass clean over. I tell you, that is my thought all the time. I'm a priest, and I'm not in the meeting just to enjoy. I'm in the meeting to bear the ark until all of God's people can pass through. Then I can go and take a break. That's just habit. That's just where it is. How good it is, brothers, that you would have this in you for the rest of your life. Now, this is a true pillar, a real pillar in the church that can be counted on. All right, I think this is good enough. It's already noon, and there are still three questions. I don't have the time. Let me do a quick look of them. I think we better stop here, huh, Eddie? Okay. I think those are... As long as I answer the dating one, I think you're all okay. Yeah. All right, I better stop here. Are you okay this weekend? I feel quite relaxed with you. I feel very happy to get to see all of you. And I hope you would all have further opportunities to have this kind of gathering. It's very, very good. Very, very good. Thank you.